Hey guys, welcome to a very exciting episode 30 of the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm your host, James Darley. If this is your first time listening, thanks for tuning in. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday, and all show notes can be found on my website, www.historicperformance.net. The best way to reach out to me is via Twitter, at historicperform. There I publish all the latest episodes and interact with listeners. Episode 30 is really an episode of reflection for me. I started the Historic Performance Podcast in October of 2015, and quite frankly, I didn't know if anybody was going to even listen to it. It still amazes me that my audience continues to grow week after week. For episode 30, I'm really honored to be joined by Matt Reeves. Matt is the head of fitness and conditioning at Leicester City, and Leicester's really enjoying a fantastic season in the Premiership. I don't know any pundit that in August when the Premiership started could even have thought of that Leicester would still be in first place in February, and it's a real testament to the type of culture they have built there. And a key element of that culture has been the sports science department, because they have been able to minimize injuries, keep a consistent lineup, and allow Claudio Ranieri to field the best starting 11 possible. Matt just comes on this episode and absolutely does an amazing job. He was so open, gave so much great information, and within this episode, you're going to hear about the recovery methods used at Leicester, how they're dealing with Jamie Vardy's hamstring issues, and he takes you on a typical week in Leicester where they have a Saturday to Saturday fixture, going into minute detail about every single day of the week. I'm really indebted to Matt for coming out here and being so open. It really helps everybody out there. So Matt, thank you. It's a fantastic episode. So I'm not going to say a single word more. Let's get the show started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Extremely excited to be joined by Matt Reeves today. Matt is the head of fitness and conditioning at Leicester City. He works with the first team. Of course, they're enjoying an amazing run this year. And we've been at it for a little bit trying to schedule this podcast, but finally happy to have figured it out and be joined by him. So Matt, welcome, and how are you?
Thanks very much, James. Yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you this evening. Like you say, I think we'd initially tried to pencil this in well before Christmas. And at that point, things were going well at the club. And it was kind of about keeping the fingers crossed and hoping that that run continued until we went live. But everything seems good. And yeah, excited to speak to you.
Definitely. Matt, so if you can just start us off giving us a little bit about your background and how come you decided to pursue sports science?
Sure. I think when you consider that side of things, it probably started off when I was a kind of young teenager. I was playing a lot of football, really enjoyed it, was actually a schoolboy at Fulham Academy. And so I was heavily involved in it, training three times a week, playing at the weekends and kind of enjoying that elite sporting environment. Now, as I got older, 16, 17 years old, I started to realize that I probably didn't possess the ability to really make that cut at the top level and started to pursue other areas. I was thinking about what I could go into and decided to stay on, do my A-levels. And obviously the PE side of things really interested me, biology especially. And so decided to go to Loughborough University to do my undergraduate degree, which over here in the UK has got a great reputation for sport and exercise science. And so that's kind of where I went. And it was here that I really felt that desire to go into sports science in the applied setting, seeing some of the great facilities that Loughborough had on campus and getting the opportunity to work with some of the athletes there really just gave me that drive to pursue it even more. And it was kind of in my final year that I found myself sat in a lonely halls of residence over the summer when most of the students were back at home, kind of enjoying themselves. And I was there waiting for a pre-season with the football team. And what actually happened was I sent off an email to a local team in Leicester about coming in for a little bit of work experience. And it was really off the cuff kind of email that I sent, not really expecting a reply, as is probably often the case with many students that try and get opportunities in at professional clubs. But luckily enough, Dave Rennie, the head physio at Leicester, actually got back to me and gave me my first opportunity, really. And it actually happened that that was just for a day. And then a day became two, and then it became the rest of the week. And before I knew it, I was a kind of full-time intern at the club during my final year of my undergraduate studies. And since then, haven't really looked back on things.
I guess a good way to start off the podcast would be to give an overview of the sports science department in Leicester City.
Sure. I think when I consider the department here at Leicester from when I first came in as that intern in 2008, it's grown massively since that time. Obviously, we were then a League One club, and throughout the previous kind of six or seven seasons, the club's risen to be now in the Premier League. And with that, the players require more support. And so the department has grown. The way it kind of heads up at the minute is I'm there as the head of fitness and conditioning. And we also have two other sports scientists working alongside me. And it's our jobs to take care of the warm-ups on the pitch, the physical conditioning with the players, and also take care of daily monitoring, whether that requires the GPS, heart rate, and any subjective measures that we're trying to take on a daily basis. And really, we just feed that back into the coaches in order to try and influence some of the decisions that they're making about training and about the players that they're selecting. Alongside that, we've got a strength and power coach who came across from Leicester Tigers, where he'd initially worked. And he's come in around 4 years ago and actually had a really big impact on the strength and power program that we have here at Leicester City. And so it's a big credit to Mitch Willis in some of the work that he's done. But I think one of the key aspects of our department is how closely everyone works together. We're really good friends and we want to do things to help each other and drive the department forward. That's the kind of sports science thing on a daily basis. Now, in addition to that, we have a consultant nutritionist who comes into the club for 2 days a month. And it's his remit to take the body composition data from the players. He's giving them advice on their dietary requirements and any kind of loading strategies that the players might need in the build-up to games. Now, you might look at it and think, okay, can't I do that, for example? Now, yeah, I could do. I'm ISAC accredited and that would be fine. But for me personally, I think it's really important to have somebody that comes in from an external source that isn't here with the players day in, day out, isn't out on the training pitch with them. And so that kind of provides them with that extra focus that they might need in some of those longer term goals that we set them. The final member of the sports science department is Paul Balsam. Now, Paul's also a consultant with us and he's oversees the sports science and performance analysis teams. Now, his main remit is probably setting up the department and trying to challenge us in order to take things forward throughout the whole season and year on year. And that's been a key aspect, really, throughout my career. I've always worked with Paul. And so I owe him a lot of credit, really, for the opportunities that I've had throughout my time in football. But we certainly aren't set in where we are now and what we're achieving at this moment in time and want to take things forward. That's kind of the sports science team per se. Now, I think it'd be wrong in this moment to not mention the physio department. Again, they're not particularly large in numbers of people, but we do work really closely with them. And I think that's one of the key aspects in terms of our management of injuries and keeping players fit and available, is that we do work really closely with the head physio, Dave Rennie, and also Simon Murphy, the first team physio.
Absolutely. And that's a great segue to what we want to discuss next, which is Leicester has really enjoyed a great run in the English Premiership this year. And a big part of it has been consistency. The fact that you've been able to bring in the same starting 11 for many of the games in a long, arduous season and have been able to really minimize injuries. So as a club, how have you been able to do that?
Sure, it's a very holistic approach, I think. we need to involve the players in everything that we're doing. We need to create their buy-in to what we're trying to achieve and the kind of interventions that we're putting in place. Alongside that, obviously, the coaching department with the manager, Claudio Ranieri, is vital that we are able to influence their behaviours, the decisions that they're making, and ultimately the sessions that they're putting on for the players. And so it's really this kind of three-pronged approach of the sports science and medical department, the coaching departments and the players themselves all coming together with an understanding of what we're trying to achieve here. Now, I think there's been a lot of documentation in the press about the team spirit here at Leicester, about the players being really together as a group and fighting for each other. And that's a really key aspect of things. But that's kind of been created over a number of years in some of the culture that's driven out of the information that we have here and the way we try and treat the players, empowering them to make decisions for themselves rather than kind of ruling over them with a hard stick. It's true that we've had very good consistency levels in the team. I think when you look through our starting lineup throughout the majority of this season, I think over 8 of our players played 80% or more minutes. So that's really encouraging for us. Obviously, that's great for the manager too. He's able to have a good availability in training in order to get those tactical insights across to the players. And then ultimately, he's got what he thinks is his best 11 available on a Saturday when it ultimately counts the most.
Before the podcast, we were talking a little bit about the data that you collect at Leicester City and then how you use that for injury prevention. Could you talk to us a little bit about that now?
Sure. I think as we know, it's really difficult to predict injuries per se. I think what we can try and do is limit the number of injuries that we get. Now, for me personally, I think load is by far and away the most important aspect that we have to deal with out there on the training pitch and making sure that players are able to cope with the demands of a match day. And so it's really important that we control the daily and the weekly training schedule in order to achieve this. We're currently using the Catapult GPS system in order to do this. It helps objectify our training process, provides us with some statistical feedback as to how hard the session has been, what specific areas we've managed to target, and also helps feedback that information to the players. And that's something which I know I mentioned earlier in terms of the transparency of information, but that's really key to us. I think it nowadays, with the amount of technology that we have, it means that there's no real hiding place for the modern day athlete. And every training session, they're accountable for their actions, which helps develop that group culture and the willingness to fight for each other and put in all that they can. We're also collecting heart rate data on a daily basis using the Polar Team 2 system. And this is a key aspect throughout the pre-season especially, and also when new players join in and we're just really trying to get a handle on how they're integrating into the group, into our training regime, and how their body's coping with the demands we're placing on them, that kind of internal load. But again, it's about objectifying it in line with some of the subjective markers that we have of morning questionnaires and also post-session RPEs. I think the way that we've tried to go with the subjective morning questionnaires is using Google Questionnaire on the iPad. Again, previously, we'd always use a kind of clipboard and we'd go around and ask the players how they were feeling. But I think in the modern day, with the technology available for us, it's important to make things as exciting as possible for them. Ultimately, they don't want us taking information off them as if we're coming round taking their food order, whether they want onion soup followed by a steak. I think it's up to our department to take things forward into the 21st century. And that's what we're trying to do with some of the information we're collecting now.
What is some of the information that you're collecting in those subjective wellness questionnaires?
We try and cover a bit of everything, really. Firstly, we look in and around the sleep. So we're trying to take information based on when the players are going to sleep, when they're waking up. how many times they're disturbed in the night and why that is, whether it's things on their mind, whether it's to do with waking up for the toilet. Now, again, depending upon what that is, we can try and make interventions to do with the time that they're drinking, the night before, what they're consuming, etc., like that. And then we try and establish their kind of current energy levels, just using a nice, easy subjective scale, rating from extremely poor through to very good. And this is something which I'm sure a lot of people are doing on a daily basis. We also then look at the body as a whole and then break it down into the individual muscle groups that we're interested in. Of course, lower limb, but also some upper limb, looking at the back as well. And what we try and do with that is place a marker from the players of how they're feeling. And this really helps us interpret some of the information that we've seen the day before in terms of the training data and understand how the players are feeling, any issues that may be bubbling under the surface, and then start to act upon that with the physio department as well. I think one of the things that we find is that with this information, if we start to see asymmetries in the players, so a specific individual that's maybe seen having more pain on one hamstring than the other, we can start to try and address that, see what's happening, see how long this has been going along for. But we can also look at if a number of players are struggling with certain issues. So if, for example, we see across the squad three or four players that are all suffering from quad issues, maybe only minor, maybe a three or a four on the 10-point scale. But what that means is potentially we've done something out of the ordinary in training, whether that was a shooting drill that went on longer than would normally happen the day before, or a specific session that's been put on, that maybe the distances weren't quite accounted for in the way that we'd like to hope. And so it's about drawing in some of the information we can get from the players and pairing it up with the objective markers that we can see from the technology available to us. I think with all of this, one of the things that I'd say is it's really important not to get carried away with just the information itself. And you often can't beat just asking a player how they're feeling, why they're feeling that way, what they've done, how their recovery was, etc., and kind of making it a little bit more personal than just dealing with numbers on a sheet. And that's, again, where the department that we've got here tries to work really closely together and have a key understanding of each individual within the squad and where they are at that specific time in the training week.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading a article that I believe was published in 2014, and it was actually an interview that they did with you. And part of what you had mentioned was the importance of individualizing. So how at Leicester do you individualize based on the data that you're receiving in a team-based sport like football?
Yeah, I think that's one of the key aspects that we have to try and do with any kind of intermittent sport and team sports across the board. Because ultimately, each individual responds to load very differently. And each individual also performs very differently on a match day. And so they're kind of key aspects that we have to address. One of the ways that we can quite easily do that is by changing the recovery processes through that initial period of the week in the kind of 24 and 48 hours after a game. Now, what we've done in the past with that is look to invite players in for additional recovery sessions if they feel they need those, but also work with the coaches in order to try and restrict training for certain individuals by placing maybe restrictions on the number of touches they can have or which part of the session they're involved in, but also in extreme cases, maybe just completely pulling them out of the session itself. Now, it's a conversation that you have to have with the coach, and that's the same at whatever team you're at. Now, of course, they want to work with their players. That's what the players are here for, and that's what the manager's here for. But ultimately, if we can try and explain to the coaching staff that by taking a player out of one session or maybe two sessions and giving them that little bit of extra time to recover, they'll ultimately have them in the long term, they'll be fresher, they'll be ready for the game and able to replicate some of the performances that they've done in previous weeks, I think it's pretty much a no-brainer. One of the examples that we've had this season within the squad, and it's been quite well documented in the press, is Jamie Vardy. Now, Vards is an extremely explosive player. Anyone that's watched any of our games this season will see that as a squad, we're very counter-attacking in style. But Vards, especially for us, is a really key element in that. And so we've taken it upon ourselves to try and monitor his weekly loading during the week so that he's able to replicate the high-intensity distances when it comes to a match day. One of the things that we've seen with him is it appears to work quite well. He's been consistently achieving in around 500 meters of sprinting and is consistently our highest one or two players for high intensity work rate. And so that's really encouraging for not only us as a department, but it also helps the coaches buy into what we're trying to achieve and understand that with a little bit of careful management and maybe looking after the player a little bit more than maybe they would have been in previous years, when it was kind of just expected that players would be out and train every day and do running sessions before a day off. I think we try and treat the players a little bit more as an individual and try and establish especially what's right for them in that moment.
One thing that you mentioned previously is the importance between those 24 and 48 hours and individualizing recovery methods. So do the players themselves choose what recovery method they want to have within that period based on, you know, how their preferences and how they believe those recovery methods are helping them?
Yeah, they do. They do to an extent. I think, again, this is something which we've built up over a number of years. The players have an understanding of what we expect of them in the recovery process. Now, there are certain fundamentals that we want to take part in. We usually tend to start with a bike flush circuit. Now, this will be deloading the players, taking a little bit of stress away from their joints and muscles, and just helping them to spend a little bit time as a squad or as the starting 11 that have just played. This is obviously important as a recovery process, but it's also quite important in giving them a time to reflect on the game, discuss with each other how it went, review their clips that they've got on their iPads as well in terms of their touches on the ball, the passes that they made, the decisions that went on during the game. And so it's quite nice to start the recovery session as a collective group. We then look to split off into smaller groups whereby we're then looking at using foam rollers, upper body flush circuits, and also some stretching in order to try and target slightly different areas with the players. Of course, there might be certain individuals that we think need a little bit more of one of these areas, and so they'll be required to kind of circle twice around the circuit. But we'll also try and integrate our masseurs that we have here at the club in order to work with the players on an individual basis. Now, again, this might be your standard sports massage, but with some of the players, we actually try and utilize ice massages, which sound quite freaky and a little bit different, but ultimately it is just the masseur working with a bag of ice over the muscles. Now, what this does is just lowers the body temperature, still giving that stimulus of the massage itself, but also appears quite a nice big red patch on the player's skin. Now, for them, they're looking at it and it appears as though something's happening, the recovery started, which, although it might not specifically be doing anything more than any of the other methods, in their heads, it's that perception of recovery and what the players are believing to be working. I think one of the final areas that we then try and target with the players is whether we're using the ice baths that we have in the first team changing room or more recently, probably over the last 9 months or so, we've actually had a cryo chamber unit at the training ground. And so that's been quite a new and exciting method to expand our recovery process, whereby players are going in to the cryo chamber for a spell of around 4 minutes, but they're exposed to temperatures of minus 135 degrees, which I'm sure, I know over here in the UK, it's pretty cold at the minute, but you can't quite believe going to temperatures like that. Now, where the players like it is it's a really dry ice. So it's not quite as harsh on the skin as when you are in an ice bath or something like that. And so the players can get through it and they come out and feel quite rejuvenated afterwards. We often see the players walking from the chamber down the corridor quite light on their feet and feeling really good in themselves. And that's that process as the blood flushes back around the body and their body kind of restores to normal. But it also has some knock-on effects with regards to the sleep that we see in that evening and in following evenings. And so it's been quite an important process that we've introduced in at the club.
So far, we've been talking at a fairly, I would say, high level. So just talking about the processes. But if we can get a little bit more specific and just if you would be able to take us through a week where you have one fixture on a Saturday and the next fixture is on the next Saturday. So you only have one fixture during that week.
Sure, sure. And that's something which in the Premier League and as a club that isn't in Europe or the Champions League, we've been quite fortunate that this season we've had a number of weeks like that where we tend to play on a Saturday and then the following Saturday. I think two seasons ago in the Championship, it's a completely different prospect. You're playing pretty much Saturday, Tuesday every week. Cup games are in there. Internationals are going away. And so the demands that are placed on teams that are in the Championship are really quite demanding. Now, for us this season, we've been able to have a very regimented schedule throughout the working week, which we stick to quite specifically. This helps us control our loads. There's a lot of work out there at the minute by the likes of Tim Gabbett, looking at acute loading throughout the 1 week and then also more chronic loading across a 4 week period. And that's one of the things that we really try and achieve here is making the players work hard and very intensely when they are training, but making sure that we don't see a kind of yo-yo effect of 1 week being high and the next really low. There is that consistency of training. And so I think it is important to have a plan in place that the coaches and sports science teams are aware of, that we can kind of follow. This also gives the players an understanding of what to expect when they come in to train so that they can start to prepare their bodies in the right way. Now, if I talk you through the normal working week, if we've played on a Saturday afternoon in the Premiership, then we'll tend to have the Sunday off. Now, this might seem a little bit strange. I know a lot of teams would have players in for the recovery the day after, but I think this is something that we feel is quite important. It's good to give the players time away from the training ground if we get the chance, time with their families. They can be refueling themselves. We place the emphasis on them taking care of their recovery, whether it's going to a local pool for a session, going out on a bike, taking the dog for a walk. But it's about empowering them to start that recovery process. When they then return to the club on the Monday, what we're hoping to deal with then is a player that's already beginning to feel a little bit better, has started to understand where they are and what they need to do. And so we actually split the group up into two at this point. And what we see is that the players that have started on the Saturday actually tend to have an extended recovery period, taking them through that 48 hours in order to reduce the kind of accumulation of fatigue that we might see as the kind of long and intense season progresses through in your kind of January, February, March, etc. And so we feel this 48-hour recovery is really important in limiting that effect. Now, with that said, if you have got a consistent team on a match day, It obviously means there's then a group of players that are consistently not in the team. And for them, it's really important that they're able to maintain their fitness levels, that they're able to meet the demands of the game when they're called upon by Claudio, the manager. And so the Monday session is a great example of a really intense session where we try and cover a number of different aspects of the game, work the players quite hard, usually through possession drills, small-sided games with low numbers, where they're working really intensely, but then tend to finish off the session with some prescribed running drills. Now, I know that people out there will often have the debate about whether conditioning should be done with the ball in small-sided games or whether it should be done without it in running drills. Now, I have to admit, I kind of sit somewhere between the two. I like to think the majority of conditioning can be done with the ball, with the coaches and in normal training sessions. But there's certainly a time when we can try and overload the players through running drills in order to ensure that we are ticking off each aspect of the game that we want to. Now, this might be looking at accelerations and decelerations. It could be looking at some of the higher speed aspects of running. But one of the things that we'll see is we're able to reach similar heart rate levels as what we would in small-sided games or in an 11v11. But what we're actually doing is overloading the kind of physical demands of the players. So the meters covered per minute is higher than what they'd be doing in a normal game. And some of the actions that they're producing, they're having to do on a more regular basis than if we just left it down to them in a small-sided game. And again, I think for anyone that's played football, they'll know that when you become tired or fatigued, if the opportunity is there to make the overlap or not make the overlap, you're going to not make it when you're tired. And so by taking the group through a fixed running drill, I think we start to set expectations of where we want each member of that group to be. And there's that kind of collective spirit of getting through the work and completing it to finish off the session. When we then progress through to the Tuesday, we're now kind of 72 hours after the game. And so we can start to work the group as a whole in a more intense way. And on a Tuesday, we tend to focus in and around smaller pitch dimensions, making sure that the players are getting lots of shots off, tackles, passing, etc. And so this tends to be done through 5v5 tournaments, round robins, which also increases the competition amongst the squad. We can start to see players really wanting to win. The league table each day creates that competitive edge, and no one wants to be in that bottom team ultimately. Professional athletes are competitive. That's in their nature. And so we really try and bleed that out of them as such in order to maximize the conditioning element of this session. Before some of these bits takes part with the coaches, we focus on, in the warm-up, some of the pre-habilitation elements that we think are going to take part in that those small-sided games. And so we tend to focus on accelerations, decelerations, and that kind of twisting and turning nature of 5v5 games. We also look a lot at hurdle stability, whereby players are working nice and dynamically over kind of really small hurdles, working quickly over that, and then looking to control the momentum of their body with strong knee and ankle positions. Again, just trying to replicate and prepare their bodies for the session they're going into. As you can tell by probably some of the words that I've used to describe that, it is a tough session. The players are working hard, and we can see that in the data that we get back from the players. The heart rates are high and the RPEs are very high. Now, maybe where a session like that is underestimated by the data is in something like total distance or high speed running distance. But what we do see is a high number of accelerations and decelerations whereby players are having to repeatedly press at a good intensity. And this is a key aspect of the game come a Saturday in order to carry out the manager's game plan. I think the Tuesday session then finishes off with the lower limb strength stimulus, whereby the players return to the gym and carry out some work on our unique custom-made leg press that we have in the gym. The players are lifting particularly heavy weights on here. So what we see is we've moved away from Olympic lifting, which we found required the players to have a certain competency of technique. And the academy's still employing Olympic lifts within their athletic development program in order to improve movement proficiency. But what we find is we're looking for bang for your buck. We're looking to push really heavy loads. And so we see that players are ranging from around 350 kilograms up to above 500. And so they're really shifting some big weight, and we're trying to push those physiological responses from that. The second part of their lower limb program is to undertake the Nord board, which is an eccentric hamstring stimulus. Now, don't get me wrong, the Nord board isn't the necessity behind the exercise. Of course, anyone could complete a Nordic fall with simply somebody holding their ankles. But what we find is that by having the data to objectify this information, to look at the eccentric hamstring strength of the players, that we can kind of create that buy-in. It helps the players understand where they've made improvements. So already, just in the last 7 months since we've had the device, we've seen some really big improvements across the squad in their eccentric hamstring strength. We can also look at acute fatigue that is maybe coming from the session. So if we know the demands were slightly higher than normal of that Tuesday session, we see that the players maybe register a score on the Nord board which is slightly lower than normal. And again, that gives us a really good indication of where the players are on that day, but also maybe in themselves. And so that's information that we then take on board and might influence the preceding sessions after that.
Absolutely.
Wednesday is then the midpoint of the week, and we actually choose to take that as a day off. Now, again, if you're looking at our training week, you're suddenly saying, hang on a minute, they've had Sunday off. The starters have had a recovery on Monday, and now they're having Wednesday off as well. Well, they don't seem to be training a lot at all, but what our justification for that is that we require them to work really hard on the Tuesday. And again, we want them to be fresh, ready for the Thursday session, whereby we're looking to open up the areas. It becomes a very expansive session, whereby we're looking at bigger distances, higher speeds of the players. And so we need the players to be fresh, to have adapted from the previous session, and be ready to go without risking them that we're maybe going to pick up any injuries or knocks or niggles that then suddenly quite close to the following game. And so this session tends to focus in and around box-to-box games or 11v11s. This works quite well for the manager as well, because it means that as we reach the latter stages of the week, he can start to introduce some of his tactical elements, whether that's gameplay linked in with how the opposition are going to play against us on the Saturday, or whether it's about how we want to execute our game plan. But it means that there's a little bit more realism behind the drills. Players are in an 11v11 formation. They're playing alongside their teammates that they'll be playing with on the Saturday. And so it starts to enhance that team understanding. There's no room for role ambiguity. And so that's a really important aspect. But what we've learned from the GPS data over the years is that although we thought that box-to-box games were opening the players up into larger dimensions, which allowed them to reach their higher speeds, we actually found that they weren't able to reach peak speed. It was more down to circumstance and whether, for example, the ball had been played over the top and the centre halves had had to chase it down in towards the corner flag. But without an opportunity like that, then some of our players were going without exposures of peak speed. And that's something which I think is really important for reducing hamstring injuries in football. Now, the way we've kind of gone about dealing with that is that at the end of the session, when arguably, yeah, the players are tired, and yeah, they've had a session which has maybe lasted an hour and 20 minutes before that, but we try and put them through a peak speed exposure, which is really simple and doesn't require any thought or decision making from them. The pure focus of it is to reach their peak speed. Now, the way that we do this is through a drill which we call the runway, and this involves a 10 meter acceleration whereby they're building up their speed. We then have a 20 meter period where they're looking to maintain peak speed. And then the final aspect is a 10 meter deceleration where they're looking to slow themselves down into a stop. Now, if you consider those kind of three aspects, we feel that the 20 meter period in the middle of that drill allows the players to maintain peak speed across a prolonged period. This gives them the opportunity to start dealing with some of the eccentric load that we know is associated with the terminal swing phase at high intensity running. And then the deceleration is also something that we've investigated over the years. We've played around with a 5 meter deceleration period whereby the players are kind of going from peak speed down into a three-step stop, basically. And what we found was that was almost overly working the players. We probably didn't need to put them through that level of risk. It was a really harsh deceleration. And so we've established the 10 meter as an ideal opportunity to allow the players to come to a fairly steady stop whilst also working the hamstrings through that kind of deceleration phase. And this is something which the whole squad complete after training. Of course, there might be occasions where we pull one or two individuals out of that based on the way that their subjective scores have been that morning or the fixture schedule that they've just been through. But in the main, it's quite nice that the Thursday session finishes with a collective group all completing this really intense peak speed running where we are... Not so much as a conditioning element. They have 30 seconds in between each rep of this, but it is as an injury prevention measure. And they understand this. They've bought into it. And they'll then, the following day when the GPS stats go up, they'll all be looking at their top speeds reached in that session, see how close they are to their kind of seasonal bests and whether they're able to maintain that. And again, it gives us a good idea of if players are fatigued, whether they're not quite able to reach those levels that we've seen over the previous weeks. Finally, in what now seems the kind of end of the week is the Friday session, whereby the emphasis is really put to the players to focus on the tactical aspects of the game. Again, completing set plays with the coaches. But from a physical point of view, we really try and keep these sessions short in duration, usually less than 60 minutes if possible. Sometimes it runs a little bit more than that, but the actual characteristics of these drills tend to be quite static in nature. And so we aren't kind of increasing the total distance or the load that the players are suffering too much. And so this tries to taper down ready for the game on the Saturday. Of course, throughout the whole week, all the recovery methods that I mentioned at the beginning are still available to the players. And we try and highlight certain aspects that might be of importance to them based on where we are in the week. Now, that might be nutritional aspects or supplements that they should be taking in and around the adaptation days of the Tuesday and Thursday, or whether it's maybe performance enhancing, such as the beetroot shots on a Friday, like the day before the game and the day of the game. But it's about trying to empower the players to understand what they can do to help themselves, because ultimately they want to stay on the pitch, they want to be fit, they want to perform to the top of their ability. And so we're just trying to give them the tools in order to carry that out. I think the final stage, which I probably didn't mention at the beginning of the week, is in and around the substitutes on a match day. Although it isn't set in stone that all players go out and complete a conditioning session on the pitch after a game if they haven't played, it is something that we like to do. Again, it acts as a top up. It helps maintain some of that weekly loading so that they're ready to come into the team should they be called upon. And they also have recently completed some additional strength training, some lower limb work after the game in the changing rooms, using the K-box, which makes things fairly portable compared to our normal leg press, and also another exposure of eccentrics on the Nord board. And again, this just helps create that kind of working culture amongst the group that it doesn't matter whether you've played or you haven't played, you're still expected to look after yourself, to contribute to what the group's trying to achieve and push things forward.
Matt, I'm gonna be completely honest. That was probably one of the most in-depth answers I've ever gotten on this podcast. So thank you for that.
To be fair, I have to say I thought the call had cut out a while back, but I was in my flow and I was just going with it as if nothing had changed.
No. And that's why I didn't want to interrupt you at all. I could tell that you're in your flow and you're giving out some great information. So thank you.
Super. I think, although I've said that and that's the way we work and that's something we've developed as a department and as a group of staff, but it's by no means the only way to work. I think each team will do things differently and their environment may dictate that they have to train on certain days or there's a certain focus on different sessions. But I think that's what we've found to work for us. There's a rationale behind what we try and do, the way we try and achieve things. And so it's about trying to develop that as we go forward and make alterations as we see fit.
Matt, the way I like to end all my podcasts, and I think this is going to be some interesting insight from you, because the way you started off your career is you sent this cold email, didn't know what was going to happen with it, and it ended up leading to opportunities that find you where you are now. So for people that are in uni right now and want to pursue a career in, whether it's as a strength and power coach, as a sports scientist, what advice would you have for them?
I think the main thing is don't ever become despondent. Don't worry that what you're trying to achieve maybe doesn't get handed to you straight away. I think the profession is so competitive now. There's so many people that are going to universities to study sport and exercise science or strength and conditioning as a specialization that now the market is kind of flooded with people that all want the same opportunities. Of course, over here in the UK, the ECCC in academy levels has given an influx of jobs and opportunities, but now we kind of see that maybe that has begun to stagnate a little bit. People are in those positions, and once they get an opportunity, they often don't want to give it up. So I think for anyone that's looking forward to a career in sport science, I think you really just have to try and do all that you can in order to further your understanding of not only the theory, which might be quite easy to do through books or lectures at university, but also understand the applied setting, the environment that you want to work in, how you can communicate with different people, how you need to interact with players and staff in order to get your point across and understand what makes people tick. Now, this isn't necessarily easily done. I think using the internet in order to access websites, blogs, podcasts like this is a great way. I think now people are starting to share their ideas and give their opinions on certain matters. So there is the opportunity for young students or recent graduates to get an insight into the applied setting. But I really would try and contact local clubs, whether they're professional ones at the top level or whether that's semi-pro teams that actually maybe might be more respondent to you. They might want to get an extra pair of hands in. They might see the benefit of having someone that can come in and get quite hands-on with their players, because ultimately they probably don't have the finances or support teams in place. But I think it's about trying to get in touch with people and the biggest thing is, in order to do that, is making sure that you try and connect with the person that you're sending the email to. I think personally, I probably receive between 10 and 20 emails every couple of weeks of people that want to come into the club and do some work shadowing or see what the club's doing or if there's any opportunities. And for me, the amount of times that I'll receive an email that's addressed to the wrong person or has the wrong club written in it, and oh, I'd really like to work in the south of England, and I'm kind of thinking, well, this is obviously a club that you've sent to, or an email that you've sent to seven different clubs. But I think try and be personal, try and interact with the person, and see if you can make reference to something that they've done in the past, something about their team, that immediately gives me the impression that you're actually interested in the club, in the role that might be available. And that'll immediately get my attention, and I'll maybe give a little bit more of a response. And I think we've tried to do different things over the past years whereby we've opened up the doors here at Leicester City for people to come in and see what we're doing. And now that isn't because we necessarily think what we're doing is the best, but it's probably because we're not too caught up in keeping what we're doing a secret. We're not too precious in the ideas that we've got. And so keep an eye out for them. This year we did a student workshop in pre-season whereby we invited recent graduates and those still studying in order to come here and understand what the applied setting was about, what we were going through in pre-season, throughout the whole season, how we were dealing with injuries. And we also gave them the applied aspect of taking them through a number of different warm-up drills, agility sessions, and some strength and conditioning work that they could then take into interviews in the future, into some of their practices that they were maybe already implementing, but just try and upskill them as individuals and improve their understanding of the world in which we work. And I think that will start to become a focus across a number of teams or institutions across the country, and that's got to be a good thing.
No, without a doubt, that's going to be fantastic. Matt, if anyone has any questions or comments regarding anything that they've listened to in this podcast and want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Yeah, sure. I think I'm on Twitter, as most people are these days. It's Matt_Reeves_SS. And feel free to reach out to me that way. Give me a follow. I can follow you back. We can private message if that's what you think is most appropriate. Again, if anyone gets the opportunity to come into the club, feel free. I'm more than happy to interact with people over email, but I'd say to begin with, rather than getting a barrage of emails into my inbox, which then flood me and swamp me with paperwork, I'd rather stick to Twitter to begin with, and we can go that way. And then as the discussion kind of progresses, I'm more than happy to work through emails or invite people in to the training ground as we see fit.
Absolutely. I'll link your Twitter account when I publish the podcast on my website in the show notes. I'll make sure not to put your email because I don't want people bombarding you. thanks so much for coming on, Matt. It was a great podcast, probably one of the best ones I've had. Really appreciate it.
No problem. I really appreciate it. I think it's great the work you're trying to do, James. I think for me personally, I've listened to a number of your podcasts that you've done. I think you're increasing with the number of listeners, but it's great to see each one that you do covers a really pertinent aspect of sports science, and so I hope you keep it going.
Matt, thanks for the kind words. I really appreciate it.
Super. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps others discover the show, and I deeply appreciate it. Please feel free to reach out to Matt. As Matt said on the podcast, you know, he's more than happy to help people out. Just find them via Twitter, and that can possibly lead to a conversation which progresses. With that being said, I'll see you guys next time.